We have with us live in the studios once again, John Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat This Steak. Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
All right. Lots to cover, starting with local and some changes at the waterfront.
Oh, yeah. The Seattle Police Department, it was announced this week, very quietly installed 30 surveillance cameras on Seattle's waterfront. And then to support those surveillance cameras, they installed a wireless network with 160 antennas.
Why do you need 160 antennas for 30 cameras?
That's a very good question. And some reporters asked them, you know, why did you install these surveillance cameras? What were they for? And their response was it was supposed to help the city respond to hazards and emergencies. But then an SPD spokesman confirmed that, yes, if the cameras do record criminal activities, then those recordings could be used in court to prosecute people who are arrested. The cameras are up, but SPD says it's still developing policies for how the cameras will be used and how the information will be stored and who will have access to it and for how long it will be stored, et cetera. So I find it kind of interesting that the cameras are already in place, but there are no policies yet developed for how they'll be used and what they'll be used
for. So it was for hazards and emergencies? Was that correct?
Yeah, supposedly.
I think I have a definition of that for you. There are some very wealthy developers looking to get rich off the waterfront, what with the viaduct coming down and the escalation in property values. And it's a real emergency that, they have this network up before they move in.
Yes. And, of course, so far there have been no public hearings scheduled and no explanation really given for why, as Mike asked, there are 160 antennas. And what those antennas will be used for. You know, a lot of times cameras go up and people complain, what are those cameras for? But microphones are a heck of a lot smaller and antennas are a heck of a lot less noticeable than cameras. And I think if we're to the point where you can be walking along the waterfront and you and a friend are having a conversation and somebody's listening, somebody you don't know, is listening to that conversation, then for me that brings up all the worst nightmares of the abuses of East Bloc nations under socialist rule.
Well, there should be a Fourth Amendment issue there, but of course the Fourth Amendment has been so thoroughly gutted over the last 30 years that it, you know, which is the, for people who don't know the Bill of Rights, it's the one against unreasonable search and seizure. You know, it no longer applies to stuff like this.
Mm-hmm. Actually, do we know the setup if they do have microphones on the cameras or not? Because Washington State has a law against recording someone audibly recording them without their permission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we don't know if the antennas
I'm not saying they won't. I'm just saying that currently is a law in the books.
That's the problem with this whole system. We have no clue what the cameras are for. We have no clue if they have microphones. Right. We don't know what the antennas are for.
Sure.
We don't know why there are so many of them. There's just no
They're
information.
They're working on
at
that
all.
Policy along with still working on that drone policy for the SPD.
There are 620,000 cameras they've installed in little chips, and the next time you get your flu vaccine, well, there you go.
All right.
Nanotechnology is a wonderful thing.
All right. Moving on. Gun buyback last weekend.
Yeah, last weekend was the city's first gun buyback in probably a decade. It was a qualified success, but you could also view it as a failure at the same time. In 3 hours, the city, which estimated that it would collect about 300 guns, about 100 an hour, collected 716 guns, which was more than double what they expected. Four of those guns were stolen. Several dozen were assault weapons, and three were semi-automatic shotguns, which are often referred to as street sweepers. When you make a shotgun which spews pellets in every direction into a semi-automatic weapon, it is a particularly deadly device. And of course,
and indiscriminate.
Yeah, and of course, they also managed to confiscate one missile launcher that had already been used, so it couldn't be used again. But you know, a missile launcher, which is a military weapon and shouldn't be in civilian hands. But the only reason they managed to pick up that missile launcher was because outside the parking lot where they held the gun buyback, a big private party where
a gun show.
Yes, essentially a private gun show sort of spontaneously erupted where who knows who off the street just walked up and said, "Hey, I'll give you cash for your gun, buddy, and I'll pay you a little bit more than the cops are paying to buy it." And somebody brought the missile launcher.
Less than they can turn around and sell it for.
Yeah, exactly. And somebody brought the missile launcher and was going to sell it to a private individual on the street. And the cops ran out and said, hey, wait a minute. That's not legal. You know, we can't shut down the little private spontaneous gun show, but we can grab that missile launcher. And it really points out, you know, the problem with private gun shows not requiring them to have waiting periods for private gun sales or background checks, that this kind of thing can happen. And as Jobs said, you know, right now, because of all of the extreme reaction that ordinary people are having to a little bit of talk about gun control, you've got people panicking and saying, oh my God, I have to buy any gun I can find now because, you know, in a few months, the government's gonna make owning guns illegal and they're gonna come and take my weapons away from me. There's such a huge demand for guns that the price has gone way up. Gun stores can't keep their stocks up. You know, as soon as they get something in, it sells out right away. And so, of course, not just criminals can go down to the gun buyback program, stand outside and buy a weapon, but anybody who with a little bit of entrepreneurial attitude can go down there and grab up a whole bunch of guns cheap and then resell them for a much higher price.
Which is absolutely legal.
Yeah, absolutely legal.
Well, I read that Representative Jamie Peterson is responding to
yeah.
that.
Yeah, and in the state legislature, Seattle Senator Jamie Peterson introduced a background check law, and he actually has 36 co-sponsors, and some of those are Republicans. I don't know if there's a companion bill in the House, but, you know, it's a start. We'll see how far it gets.
All right. Speaking of stuff that's going on in Olympia, the GET program is...
And all the hoopla over education funding and working on the budget, there was an advisory committee meeting over the GET program looking at the Guaranteed Education Tuition Program. That's a program whereby people can buy units in the GET plan, and if you buy 100 units, they can be turned in later to pay for 1 year of tuition at a state four-year institution in the state of Washington. Well, the GET program... people were worried about it because we've had double-digit increases in tuition over the last few years in the state of Washington. Yeah, thanks to the legislature not putting enough money into higher education in the state of Washington.
Oh, no, they've actually signed off on those tuition increases.
Oh, yes, because they didn't want to put money into higher education. They said, well, students should pay for more of it. Well, that's supposedly put the GET program at risk. So an advisory committee convened, and the chair of the advisory committee was Rodney Tom, the Republican slash supposedly Democratic.
Fake Democratic.
Yeah, senator who is head of the new coalition in the Senate, which is really a Republican coalition, that he came out with a ruling that recommended shutting the GET program, shutting it down completely. Well, you know, almost immediately afterwards, economists said, well, if you do that, if you close the GET program, then the state's really going to owe a ton of money, because you'll have to compensate people who currently own units in the program. You won't have any new people buying into the program, so no new money flowing in. And the state's really going to owe if you do that, which meant it was a very stupid idea. The best way to deal with the little bit of problem that the GET program is having, of course, is to stabilize tuition increases. And folks have proposed a tuition freeze. Representative Jerry Pollitt has proposed allowing tuition to increase only by the inflation rate for the next few years. And that if you do that, that eventually the GET program will stabilize. That if the state puts a little more money into higher education, currently the state only pays 30% of higher education costs and students pay the rest. So essentially what's happened is our public universities have become private universities with a little bit of public subsidy in there, instead of real true public universities, in which case you would expect the state to pay at least half the cost of the education.
In most Western democracies, it's all.
But yeah.
Yes.
But,
and I would also add that
that's what needs
state,
to happen.
In-state residents have really been victimized by, especially UW, you know, limiting the number of in-state slots for accepting students. the undergraduate class at
because out of state
UW,
students pay more not tuition.
Not out of state, out of country. Yeah. They actively are recruiting, as anybody who's walked the U district recently knows, actively recruiting in Japan and China and so forth.
Yeah, because they pay
students,
higher tuition.
For students that can pay the higher tuition, mm-hmm. absolutely. Mm-hmm. And then Jack goes rates up.
Yeah.
All right. Workers' comp coming up.
Yeah, the Senate has several bills that they're working on to take apart workers' compensation in Washington State. I'm just gonna talk about two or three of them. SB 5124 would cut workers' comp benefits by excluding the value of health benefits in the calculation for how much workers should be paid if they're injured. SB 5126 would let the state grab a share of benefits paid to workers who sue a third party for their injuries, so they're not necessarily going through the state for their workers' comp claim. They're going directly to court, suing a third party, and then the state wants to jump in there and grab a share of what the worker gets. And the state Supreme Court, I should note, has already ruled against that practice.
Yeah, and I should note that some of this was also included in an initiative a couple of years ago. The BIAW, the State Chamber of Commerce, and so forth, been pushing for workers' comp quote-unquote reform for quite some time.
Yeah, and then two other bills, SB 5127 and 5128, would allow all workers to opt for a one-time smaller payout on their claim instead of getting their larger payout over time, which is how the system currently works. That's particularly bad for young workers who would probably be tempted to take the larger smaller one-time payout because, of course, younger workers have most of them have almost no savings compared to older workers who can get by with smaller payments over time. There's a companion bill in the House.
You're dating yourself, by the way. Older workers don't have savings anymore either.
Yeah, I guess. And then, of course, in 2011, lump sum payments like that were allowed for people over 50. As part of so-called workers' comp reform, but now they want to expand it to everybody. But of course, you know, you look at that and you go, well, do we really need workers' comp reform? Currently, the workers' comp account it has about $778 million in it. That's up $181 million over last year. So it had a 30% increase year over year, just in the last year, in the workers' comp fund. So it doesn't appear that the workers' comp fund is in any danger of being depleted anytime soon.
Yeah, well, the reason they want reform, of course, is they want businesses to pay less.
Yes, that's exactly it.
All right. Meanwhile, over in the House...
Yeah, it is stupid season in Olympia, and we can go through this every week of really bad bill ideas. But one in particular jumped out at me in the House this week, out of a number we could talk about, HB 1091. The state Republicans are up to the same thing that they're up to in places like Florida and Pennsylvania and Virginia. It would divide the state's electoral votes in presidential elections by congressional district, that enabling the Republicans in Washington, which is a reliably Democratic state, in presidential elections to steal a few electoral votes in eastern Washington and southwest Washington. They would have gotten three in 2012. That's being pushed in Florida, Pennsylvania, and Virginia, isn't expected to be introduced this spring in at least Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, among other states. And what those states all have in common, of course, is radically conservative Republican governors and legislators. Incidentally, if all of those states had adopted the system, Romney would have won easily last year, despite losing the popular vote by a very large margin. The reason I mention this, it's not going to pass in Washington state, certainly not in the current configuration with the House controlled by Democrats and Jay Inslee in the governor's seat. But it does show you what Rodney Tom over in the Senate has bought himself into by empowering a Republican majority in the Senate, because the Republicans in Washington state are not the Republicans of Dan Evans' day, certain local daily newspaper editorial boards notwithstanding. They are just as radical and just as wingnutty and crazy as Republicans everywhere else in the country. They're trying the same kinds of stunts. And these are the folks that Tom has put in charge of committees, given the authority to determine whether bills are going to be heard publicly or voted on. This is what we're dealing with in Olympia, and this is what people will have to, quote-unquote, compromise with in order to get a budget passed this year. It's very frightening.
All right. And finally, the Blue Angels.
I'd like to have a moment of silence. Well, actually, I'd like to have an entire weekend of silence. a Navy official saying this week that sequestration, which does look like it's going to happen unless it's reversed by Congress, is going to force the Navy to cut all funding.
The budget sequestration.
Yeah, budget sequestration is going to force the Navy to cut all funding for its aerial demonstration squadron for the third and fourth quarters of 2013. That, of course, would include the Blue Angel show at Seafair in Western Washington. And, you know, the reason that they're leaking this is because they want the public outcry and uproar over losing our precious Blue Angels to spur our local representatives to act and spur the Navy to act to save this poor show. I like the idea of silence a lot better.
I do too. Resounding silence.
Yes.
All right.
Enjoy the silence, as Depeche Mode once said.
On to National and the D.C. Circuit Court.
Yeah, the very conservative federal D.C. Circuit Court ruled today that Republicans can block President Obama's recess nominations, as they did during his first four-year term, by holding sham sessions of the Senate. Now, with the idea behind this, resource appointments, and President Bush issued a record number of them during his two terms, are when a president can make an appointment to a vacant judgeship or a regulatory agency or ambassadorship or whatever, when the Senate in particular is not in session so that it's not available to vote on his nominations. Well, the Republicans in the Senate have blocked a record number of Obama's administrations, and it's not ideological. A lot of these people get unanimous endorsements from their respective committees. It's just simply because a Democratic president has nominated them. No other reason. So Obama went a couple of years ago and made recess appointments at the end of 2010, I believe, even though what the Republicans were doing was the Senate had adjourned. 99 senators were not there, but they had one Republican senator come in every day with a gavel, declare the Senate open for business, declare it closed for business a day later, and that way they could claim that the Senate was still in session. And they sued, and the conservative district court agreed with them. Now, this is going to go to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, and there is actually a good chance that the Roberts Court will reverse this and allow the recess appointments. Roberts, in particular, has a history of court of supporting a case a couple of years ago with the NLRB where their rulings were challenged because they didn't have a full quorum, again, because Republicans were refusing to allow appointments to the NLRB. He basically said that recess appointments were essential in that kind of a case, which is exactly what we're talking about here. So hopefully it will be reversed, but it is the Supreme Court. It does have five conservatives on it, and we'll see. And if Republicans are allowed to obstruct executive branch appointments in this way, chances are a lot of those ambassadorships and regulatory agencies and judgeships are going to continue to go unfilled for the next at least 4 years.
All right. You mentioned sequestration doesn't appear to be affecting certain departments in the DOD.
Yes. Even while the DOD is looking at, Pentagon is looking at overall cuts in its budget, the DOD has rolled out their new cyber command. Currently, it's a relatively small office with only 900 people. So, you could ask, how could 900 people be a small office? And what have those 900 people been doing?
Are those people or androids? That is a cyber command.
Good question. But they want to increase the cyber command to 4,000 people. They have mentioned three different forces under cyber command: the National Mission Forces, which will protect the U.S. computer system; the Cyber Protection Forces, which will protect the Pentagon's computers; and of course. What's going to be the largest office, Combat Mission Forces, to plan and execute attacks on adversaries. Well, haha.
You know, acts of war.
That's what those 900 people have been doing. They've mentioned China, Russia, Iran, and quote-unquote militant groups. You'll notice they didn't say terrorists. Militant groups is actually a broader term and could include political enemies of the state as a in addition to what you would think of as standard terrorists, people who have actually engaged in violence against the state or against civilians.
And since, of course, the internet has no boundaries, it could just as easily include U.S. activists as it could international ones.
Yes, and after Leon Panetta in October warned of a cyber Pearl Harbor, this is clearly one of the areas where the Pentagon wants to really move forward in the future.
All right. And affordable healthcare.
Yeah, this week the IRS and the Obama administration said that they have come to an agreement on a definition for what will be considered affordable health insurance under the 2010 Health Care Act. They are going to look only at the cost of coverage for individual employees. That's a single person on a health plan. They will not look at family coverage. In other words, they will look at the cost of what it takes to cover the employee only, not the employee's spouse and dependents. Federal subsidies won't be available then to help buy insurance for children in a family. Under the law, employer-sponsored insurance would not be affordable if the premiums are more than 9.5% of an employee's household income. And for that calculation, the IRS said they will only be looking at the cost to cover the employee only, not their family. So in 2012, I just want to point out that single coverage and employer-sponsored plans averaged about $5,615 per year. But for families, it was about triple that. It was $15,745. So I find this to be absolutely ridiculous. It's really the intent behind the 2010 Health Care Act was that everybody be able to have health care coverage. And if you're excluding children and spouses of people who are employed in that equation, then basically you're undercutting the whole intent of the law.
And one of the concerns about the ACA all the way around is it's got a number of pressure points like this at which bureaucrats or, say, Republican governors can really thwart the intent of the legislation if they don't agree with it ideologically. And this again, is why single payer would be so much more straightforward a way to go.
Yeah. If you had one payer, if it was the government, if we'd gone the route of expanding Medicare, then it would have been much more sane.
On to international, starting with Israel.
Yeah, Wednesday was quite a day for Israel. They committed an act of war against Syria by an airstrike in Syrian territory, allegedly targeting an arms convoy. But that's okay. They're exempt from international law because the U.S. is exempt from international law, and we say that it's okay that Israel is too. The U.S. government's saying that they believe the target was a convoy carrying sophisticated, quote-unquote, anti-aircraft weaponry on the outskirts of Damascus that was intended for the Hezbollah Shiite militia in Lebanon, as though the Syrian government in Damascus itself might not have some possible concerns or worries of its own regarding foreign air attacks from, say, Western countries that want to intervene in the Syrian civil war, or, I don't know, possibly Israel, for example. So, you know, there really is no evidence for that claim, certainly not any that's been made public, but it was an act of war. It was an illegal aggressive act by Israel. And as in the past, the U.S. is providing diplomatic and political cover for it. And as in the past, the American media really didn't point any of that out. They also didn't point out that on the same day, Wednesday, the U.S. issued a report that came to the conclusion, a little bit late, but still notable that they said it, that Israel committed war crimes in Gaza in 2009. And on the same day, Chuck Hagel was up on Capitol Hill getting grilled by his former Republican colleagues over his nomination to become the new Secretary of Defense, and he got into trouble with other Republicans for having insufficient fealty to Israel, and having once said, which he walked back during his hearing this week, that Israel has committed war crimes. They can't be war crimes because the Palestinians aren't people, and besides, it's an occupation, not war, so they're crimes against humanity. So I suppose technically that would be correct, but it was an ugly day.
All right. New drone base for the U.S.?
Yeah, the U.S. military says that it wants to build a base in Northwest Africa for surveillance drone flights and, of course, eventually possible missile strikes as well. The U.S. currently only has one permanent base in Africa, which is in Djibouti. And if you don't know where Djibouti is, imagine the peninsula that has Saudi Arabia and Yemen on the south of it. Well, just across the heel of the boot there in Africa is a little tiny country called Djibouti, just across the straits from Yemen.
It also borders Somalia within Africa.
Yes,
and we've launched a lot of listeners. We've launched a lot of missiles there recently too.
Yeah. So, it does happen to be very far from Mali and other places where there are Islamist groups trying to take over territory.
Yeah, funny how they announced that right in the wake of that all being in the news, even though it's obviously been planned for some time.
Yeah, and the U.S. wants a permanent base there now. Of course, the U.S. has already been flying surveillance drones and small prop planes over northern Africa from temporary bases, most of them in places like Ethiopia. But they want a permanent base. And this is kind of interesting because Africa has traditionally been viewed as under the sphere of influence of Europe, but no longer.
Now it's under the sphere of China, which is also concerning.
Guatemala.
Yeah, a ruling in a Guatemalan court this week that former Guatemalan dictator Efrain Rios Montt must stand trial on charges of genocide and crimes against humanity. Also, his intelligence chief, Jose Mauricio Rodriguez Sanchez, will also stand trial. Together, Rios Montt and Sanchez had the final command over Guatemalan troops that killed thousands of mostly indigenous people.
Hundreds of thousands.
Well, over the course of the Civil War, yeah, hundreds of thousands. But during his command, thousands of mostly indigenous people during what were some of the bloodiest months of Guatemala's Civil War. Rios Montt had long been immune to prosecution while serving as a legislator, but last January he retired. Immediately afterwards, prosecutors filed charges, and it's taken about a year for all of those appeals to work their way through Guatemalan courts. And now, with this latest ruling, Rios Montt and Rodriguez Sanchez will go to trial.
And mind you, even though these crimes happened roughly 30 years ago, Rios Montt was in good enough standing that he made a very nearly successful run for the presidency of Guatemala, only 3 years ago.
Fairly recently.
And the United States was more or less supportive of that.
And we've been supportive of him all along.
Yeah, he was Ronald Reagan's friend for democracy.
Yep.
Egypt.
Yeah, Egypt, they've had over a week of national protests that started last Friday on the second anniversary of the popular uprising that pushed Mubarak from power. They were spurred on, of course, by Mohamed Morsi's, the current president's, grab for power when he dissolved the elected parliament and pushed through a constitution that favors Islamic law. And of course, he hasn't been making any changes or reforms to the police or military. And protesters were especially angry about the fact that no police have and no military personnel have been prosecuted for the abuse, torture, and deaths of protesters during the uprising that overthrew Mubarak. Of course, so far in the past week, about 60 people have died in the police crackdown on demonstrations that have gone on all across the country of Egypt. And last night I understood that there were attacks on the palace in Cairo.
Yeah, quite a few. And ironically enough, the police are showing far less restraint now than they did when Mubarak was in power.
Yeah.
Iceland.
Yeah, after all that grimness, we have one piece of very good news. An announcement on Friday by Iceland's interior minister that he ordered the country's police not to cooperate with FBI agents 2 years ago when they were sent to Iceland to investigate WikiLeaks. It offered a fairly rare glimpse into the Department of Justice's investigation of WikiLeaks. Ögmundur Johansson told the Associated Press that he was upset when he found out that FBI agents had flown to Iceland to interview WikiLeaks associate in August 2011 without even bothering to notify or tell the Icelandic government, which of course gave safe haven to WikiLeaks to try and protect them from the aggressions of people like, the U.S. government. So very nice to see a state which also has done some very interesting things in terms of recovering from the financial industry imposed economic meltdown that they went through a few years ago.
I wonder if Cyber Command is going to add Iceland to that list of international enemies.
Probably already is. So good, some good news to see a small country standing up for its rights.
Yeah, they'll probably have like one of those training exercises
on Iceland.
Yeah, they're gonna
some Icelandic nation.
Yeah, we're going to conduct an exercise in waters offshore that involves crashing Wi-Fi systems.
All right. talking as we do every week with John Parrish and Maria Tomczyk, both with Eat the State. Where do people find Eat the State?
www.eatthestate.org. There's a new lead article up this morning on the Garfield map boycott.
And you can find my archived articles at mariatomczyk.com.